Hi everyone, Lucas Werner here. If you've been enjoying these conversations with artists, I invite you to come visit David's Werner Gallery exhibitions in person. We're located in New York, Los Angeles, London, Paris, and Hong Kong. New exhibitions open each month. Plan your visit at davidswerner.com.
I'm Rainer Judd, and artist, filmmaker, president of Judd Foundation.
I'm Sophia Coppola, and I'm a filmmaker.
From David's Werner, this is Dialogues, a podcast about artists and the way they think.
I know that if I'm not obsessed and excited about something, it won't keep my interest for how long it takes to make a movie, which takes a couple of years. So I know that I have to really love it and have no choice but to make it and be that drawn to it.
They were to wake up each day following what interests them without a lot of judgment about its rationality within the current social context, with a great trust of what interests them is of value.
I'm Lucas Werner, and every episode features a conversation. We're taking artists, writers, philosophers, designers, and musicians and putting them in conversation with each other to explore what it means to make things today. This week's pairing, Rainer Judd and Sophia Coppola. For this episode, we managed to bring together two old friends who have leaned on one another creatively since they were teenagers. Rainer Judd is a filmmaker and artist and the daughter of Donald Judd and serves as the president of Judd Foundation. And Sophia Coppola is an Oscar-winning filmmaker whose new movie, On the Rocks, features a bon vivant art dealer played by Bill Murray. Like Rainer, Sophia grew up with an artist father, Francis Ford Coppola, and their shared experiences around art and creativity have nurtured their decades-long friendship into adulthood. I mean, the thing that I was most interested in, unsurprisingly, is that Aldous Huxley quote that I guess you guys sent each other over the summer.
Oh yeah, Rainer found that and sent it to me this summer, and then I feel like we keep coming back to that.
And honestly, I at the moment can't remember where I found it.
That's the best kind of quotes.
Here's the quote. It's dark because you are trying too hard. Lightly, child, lightly. Learn to do everything lightly. Yes, feel lightly, even though you're feeling deeply. Just lightly let things happen and lightly cope with them. I was so preposterously serious in those days, such a humorless little prig. Lightly, lightly, it's the best advice ever given me. When it comes to dying, even, nothing ponderous or pretentious or emphatic, no rhetoric, no tremulous, no self-conscious persona putting on its celebrated imitation of Christ or Little Nell. And of course, no theology, no metaphysics. Just the fact of dying and the fact of the clear light. So throw your baggage and go forward. There are quicksands all about you, sucking at your feet, trying to suck you down into fear and self-pity and despair. That's why you must walk so lightly. Lightly, my darling, on tiptoes and no luggage, not even a sponge bag, completely unencumbered. Aldous Huxley.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I just remember the go lightly part, but it's nice to hear the whole thing. And
what's a sponge bag?
I don't know. Is it like your toiletry bag?
I think it's a toiletries bag. Exactly. Yeah.
An actual bag for your sponges. Got it.
I think you're just supposed to travel with nothing. No toothbrush, no bag. Yeah. Just totally.
Drop it all. Yeah, I love that. Because the summer we were all at home on lockdown, and I was in Napa where I grew up, talking to Rainer a lot, and just everything, like, there just seemed to be too much to try to do that your normal life. Like we were forced to slow down. And I remember Rainer telling that to me, that quote, and it just kept coming back to me when I kept thinking, go lightly. But and I love that he is telling the younger person, because it's true that we're all so worried and serious. And then you kind of let go of that, hopefully little by little, but I kept going back to it. And during this last year, when you're trying to do everything in a time where it's not meant for you to do so much, or to slow down, that we all had to shift really quickly. So it was a good reminder. And I think it connects to Minor Rainer's friendship, besides just being friends, but just our how we cheer each other on, and that camaraderie of artistic people. And I was doing some talk about film, and someone was asking me advice or how you do things. And I realized how important it is. Or I was talking about how important it was to have friends like Rainer and other creative friends that like cheer you on, and you can talk ideas out and bounce things off. And that's such a big part of the process that I never really thought about before. And so Rainer and I started talking about that, and you were talking about other, I guess growing up and your dad and fellow artists, and how they just about that conversation that they had and how it inspired them to do work and to explore.
I was hoping to dig up a Larry Bell quote that was so moving to me, that was from a talk on the ground floor of Spring Street, but the recording of the talk hasn't been found, and I haven't accessed my journal where I think I quoted it. However, what he was describing was camaraderie amongst artists, and it didn't even seem to be necessarily geographic based. Like, some of them could be in LA, some could be in New York, but it was the spirit that they were to wake up each day following what interests them, without a lot of judgment about its rationality within the current social context, with a great trust of what interests them is of value, whether it was a visual component. Like Larry, you can very much think about his interest in iridescent surfaces, iridescent glass, but also other surfaces. And this idea that you it's not like you're a servant to your interests, but you're using your interests as a compass. And in order to figure out what the direction they're going in, you actually need to go follow them for a little while without judgment. And that camaraderie was something I was talking about with Soph, because we hadn't really taken the time to, maybe just this year, to have a perspective on our exchange that's been so meaningful to us over time.
Maybe you can go back a little bit in time and just talk about how that exchange began.
Yeah, it's fun because we've been friends since we were 15 and 16. We met as teenagers. Wow. In the 80s in Paris. A friend introduced us. But we didn't grow up near each other. But we've stayed in touch over all these years. And I feel like just the connection is, both having an enthusiasm for following creativity and just sort of the, I feel like we were saying this the other day about how we both grew up with this idea of like artistic integrity was the highest pursuit in life. We both grew up with that. So I think because that value is so important to both of us, we have that in common. And I know that Rainer will always steer me towards following my compass. And so I can always talk things through. And I know that, she'll always make sure it helps me go stay on that path and not, and can help me hear that. And I don't know, I think it was after Beguiled or another project with the studio, I was so down. I didn't want to make work because so much it felt like you were involved in the kind of the commerce of it and the business side of it with the people that I, with the executives that you work with, because movies are expensive and there's that aspect. And I was so drained by the other side of it, not the fun creative part of making it. And I was like, I was just so down. I didn't want to make anything. And then I was talking to Rainer, and she like got out her journal and colored pencils with my daughter, who was 8 or 9. And they made me this drawing about like all these things to remember, like that you need to make art and like refocus on what is important. And they did this drawing with this quote, and I had it up on my bulletin board. And then, and I really, I don't know, it just like, it was such a moment that I was remembered to kind of get back on track with what was making things.
Well, just, you know, what Rainer was saying about this Larry Clark quote, or being interested in what you're interested in. So Larry Bell, sorry, not Larry Clark, Larry Bell. About being interested in what you're interested in every day and surfaces, you know, basically following whatever that interest may be. You know, that sounds like, as someone on the outside of your industry, a hard thing to do when you're making a film, right? It just feels, given all the forces at play, like that would be quite difficult. And so I'm curious how you carve out the space while you're making a project, and not, I guess, while you're thinking it up, but while you're actually making it, to channel that, you know, energy.
Yeah, I think like any artistic pursuit or creative pursuit, you have to follow those interests of what you're exploring and what excites you and what's fun. I think the moment it gets bogged down and you lose that, then I don't think the work is as good, or it's not connected to what you want to make originally. So I think it's just, for me, always making sure to, in the beginning, I know that if I'm not obsessed and excited about something, it won't keep my interest for how long it takes to make a movie, which takes a couple of years. So I know that I have to really love it and have no choice but to make it and be that drawn to it. Which maybe if you're doing a drawing or painting, you can lose interest and then toss it aside. But with a movie, you have to, once you start, you can't stop, really. You can't abandon ship. So you have to be at that level. And, but I think it's like anyone, you always listening to that voice of just doing stuff that you're really excited about, and it's fun. If it loses the fun, then, I mean, of course there's moments where it's hard work and it doesn't always feel fun, but generally, you know, that it's something that you believe in and care about, and to have that, I guess just to make the time to listen to yourself and not ignore your instincts, which you can be, I feel like greed and vanity can get in the way. Like, you have to really be careful. So it's nice to be reminded of what you really care about, and to have people that you know you can't bullshit again.
And also people that you can be vulnerable with. I feel like during this COVID time, distinctly, that I'm navigating more consciously, that I'm not seeing as often the people that I was regularly vulnerable or truthful with. Like, I'm not seeing you in person, so we haven't seen each other since the spring, but there's somehow that less time to be, the COVID thing makes it kind of like you're surviving, you're strong, less ability to be soft. I don't know why I went onto that topic, but I think that part of the camaraderie is not just that people you can't bullshit, which is so valuable, but people that you can tell, that talk about the bullshit with. Yeah, because it's a lot to navigate various unconscious structures, and being able to say something's really hard, to be given insight into how far you've come when you're, I remember at some at various points writing, feeling like, oh, there's no way I can like go back in and make this better. And you just get so energized by your friend, or I've gotten energized by Sophia acknowledging that I got to a place that I hadn't really, I didn't have any perspective on. And I think we can, in a way, help create milestones for achievement that otherwise...
You lose track of that on yourself.
Yeah. Because we're, as artists, you speed along and you got your eyes on the next job, the next, I don't mean job like job, but
you're always going on the next challenge.
Yeah.
I agree. And you're never satisfied.
Exactly. So
it's hard to like have that moment to say, hey, I did something, because you're always unsatisfied and trying to figure out the next thing.
I mean, like, just confession. I remember when I wrote this one project and you sent me a really meaningful email, I was on my porch and I literally cried about it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Because it got me to stop and acknowledge, how far I'd gone.
That's important, but it's hard for us to do for ourselves. And I feel like the big motivation of making things in the first place is to connect with other people. So when somebody gets what you're doing, it's like the first kind of hint of that you're on the track of something that connects, besides to yourself, but maybe with someone else too.
No, absolutely. I think we my dad wrote about that. Like, you can't know that what you're making and what interests you and what you're exploring is of interest to anybody else. But if you follow it and then can share it, it's kind of like we can bet that somebody's going to be interested. It might not be hugely accessible, but
someone else probably had some feeling that connected with that. Yeah. And it's hard because I always worry about being self-indulgent, but because when you're doing something personal, it feels like who cares? But I think that there must be something universal in those kind of basic elements that you don't know what they're going to be. But I think we're always second guessing ourselves. I also think that Rainer and I talk a lot about like creative meandering and putter time, like how important that unproductive time is. And Rainer always reminds me of that. And the Go Lightly quote reminded me of that too, because I'm always like trying to do stuff and like to just stop trying to do stuff all the time, and how that's such a huge important part of one's creative process, to give yourself the space and time to just wander around and think about stuff and look at things. And so I think I always forget to like make time for that.
I was going to ask actually sort of like, how do you marry the Go Lightly quote with the idea of kind of intense artistic integrity? And I think that's the answer, right? That there is an integrity in letting things not happen, right? And sort of like being passive for a time until things start to stew, you know, on their own. Yeah.
I would say it's listening rather than being passive.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Good point.
It's like active listening.
Yeah. And I think it feels like during this whole time of being at home during COVID, everyone's kind of forced to slowing down and that. So we've been talking a lot about that sort of, making that, just honoring that time to meander and think about what you wanted to.
You know, you were kind of saying before, you guys were talking about how you, when you're, a creative person, you're really just making things. You're really making things for a community. And I sort of deeply believe that that's true, that if the kind of core people that you respect and are in a conversation with interact with what you're making in a positive way, that's kind of the most pleasure that's going to come from a creative process.
I know. I feel like in the film business, people are always like, are you going to make a bigger movie? Or do you care how many people see your movie? And I guess that's a normal thing for directors to think about. I don't think about that. I just think about if the people that I respect or care about are into it. And I remember with my movie Somewhere, nobody saw it. They like the studio barely put it out. But we had one screening, and all these artist friends, like Rachel Feinstein, Alyssa Yuskavich, and that crowd, they were there and they were so into it. I remember Alyssa being so into it and so encouraging, and they like and those guys, like having them, like I just felt like, that my artist friends really were into it. Like that is one of like the most successful moments in my mind. And so it's true. I think having a community of especially other creative people is the most gratifying thing.
This wasn't on the agenda, but when I think about Somewhere and I think about that screening, if I'm thinking about the same screening, it was like downstairs, and
I'm sure there was only one
famous actor guy was there. I can't remember his name. doesn't matter. but that had such powerful components to it, that film, particularly the beginning. And I remember seeing it early on in the post process and then at that screening. And I think just because we're having this conversation and Harris has played such an important role in your life and your development, it would be great to just talk about Harris for a second and how he, as in light of this idea of camaraderie, how he in a way re-inspired you. Is that okay, Lucas?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know who you mean by Harris.
Harris Savides was a great cinematographer who passed away a few years ago. And I met him through Ann Ross, my friend, who's my production designer. So I think all those kind of key collaborators are so important too, as in what we're talking about of camaraderie. And so he was a great cinematographer. And after I did Marie Antoinette, I was really burnt out and didn't want to make movies anymore. It just got to be such a tangle. There was so much coordinating and just the whole beast of it, which, you know, I'm glad I did it now, but at the time I was just like, oh, I don't want to do that again. And then I was talking to Harris. We shot some short thing for like a commercial, and we got excited about the idea of like how simply you could make a movie, and the whole thing of that movie Somewhere was just an exercise on how minimally we can make a movie and how simple it could be and still hopefully tell a story. And it was fun to have this kind of exercise and this really strict guideline that we were following. But I felt like I was really connecting to making something just for the art of, or the sake of making something, and not about it having to reach a lot of people. And I feel like he got me back on track. His quote was always, keep it simple. So that's something that I always think, keep it simple, the best things. And also the most confident things are when, for me at least, or when you do it as simply as you can.
I also think Harris and your relationship with him, I remember the term also being less coverage, that you were so steeped in this, I don't know, the language of film term of coverage means, Lucas, that you may or may not know, but it's getting enough shots of a scene so that the editor has enough to work with, and that Harris inspired and Sophia to kind of break away from what she had been doing and shoot less coverage. But I also think this comes into play with thinking about how second generation creative people are, you know, kind of even start off rebelling against what they were raised with, and then come around and then reject and then take in this kind of shopping for what works for you. It's almost like, definitely childhood is a different kind of schooling than school, but I feel like collaborators can really get you to question what you were raised thinking about making, whatever medium it is. And yeah, I just think it was a great moment and a story that I obviously remembered Harris's effect on you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because he really, he only cared about artistic pursuits and making something, you know, that you believe in. And so it always came back to kind of being pure and doing what you want.
The thing that I kind of weirdly value more and more about the industry that I'm in, Rainer's in too, different industries that you're in, but at least your connection to the art world is just that the desire, like there is no big audience. The big audience is never coming, ultimately. You know what I mean? Like you can have a museum show that can be well attended, but we're talking about tens of thousands of people most of the time, right? We're not even talking about 100,000 people, truly. You know, I mean, you know, when you get into the hundreds of thousands, you're talking about the annual attendance for a big museum, which might be 2 million people. You know what I mean? It's just like orders of magnitude smaller in terms of breadth.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense to be focused on a small audience. Well, I've always felt that way.
Just think how much smaller it was. I know we're a different generation, Lucas, but when we were your age or younger, I remember even your dad's films went through a phase maybe in the 80s or the 90s where they were much more popular in Germany. And my dad's art was much more popular in Germany. It's like America went through a phase where they weren't paying attention to, I don't know, rigorous. I don't know. Maybe America went through a pretty tacky phase in the 80s. But I remember this sense of like Germany holding the line. Like Germany still loved Coppola and Judd. And because those were the two guys that I was checking on popular culture with. But also, just to put it in perspective, that because I get asked about what it's like to have a famous father. And my dad wasn't famous when we were kids. Like, it was like being a scientist's daughter. Like, there are so few people there were like 10 people who thought he was cool or paid for his work. It was not a large crowd. And then Soph's dad was more well known than my dad because film actually had a larger audience. But then if you think about what film's presence is now, it's much bigger. So,
yeah. Although, you know, interestingly, you know, the ideas that Judd, that your dad pioneered, right, that Don pioneered, you know, I think have saturated. It happens to be the case that he in particular saturated culture so thoroughly, you know, like design of any kind, iPhone design, you know, it's just basically like everything is on some level in dialogue with those objects, you know, and I think that became very clear from the MoMA show. And it does feel like Judd has the kind of cultural saturation that very few visual artists have. And in that way, you're right that in today's world, I think that the name recognition is much, much higher than, of course, it was ever for artists.
I think that has something to do with the way the commodification that my dad wrote about in the late 80s and early 90s, beyond his wildest ideas, it increased so much, and the commodification led to the popularity.
No, absolutely. It's clear that the things that Don was worried about in his writings
got worse.
You know, were of course like it was. Yeah, it was just was the tip of the iceberg. It's like, Don, you had no idea how fucked up.
On every level, from bulldozers to nuclear bombs to the commodification of the art world. But in that way, he's handy because he was, you know, like other good books and good thinkers. He laid a groundwork of grappling with concern and worry and love of really good things for us to go back to and take guidance from and inspiration. And man, do I love somebody who is passionate about whether it's a building or a mountain or making an artwork. I actually wonder if sometimes I take it for granted because not everybody is given permission to be passionate these days, because so many people are either brought up or brought into environments where you're supposed to put a lid on it. And that lid includes a certain kind of like laissez-faire or apathy that is actually what, I don't know, kind of like that's what turns me on about making things, people who really care and feel conviction.
But, you know, this was what I was going to ask about is the idea of that conviction that each of you experienced in your home lives growing up, which, of course, the gift it gives you in life, I think, as you guys have both said, is sort of incalculable because you have something that roots you that's not up for grabs. You know, it's not based on a trend or it's not something that someone can take away from you. You know, that's a sense of self. But I would imagine there's, of course, complications, too. And I'm just curious what your experiences were growing up in, you know, houses that were governed by a kind of creative conviction or commitment or sense of integrity that probably superseded more normal value systems, as it were.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. But I love when, I don't know, I love the Judd tote bags with the quotes, because I always love those quotes because it's like, yeah, someone else gets how important these things are about making art and art coming first. And I do think that our culture doesn't have that at the forefront, but when you grow up with that, such a strong sense of that, that it's always, I'm always grateful when someone else has that same conviction. But I don't know, I love that having that lead you, like, and to have seen that example, especially that kind of, I don't know, I feel like our dads had that, they're of the same era, of like kind of macho, make it happen no matter what and not take no, kind of that I think, I don't know, for me at least, it's given me this kind of drive that, you know, that I have, like, you know, to have the balls to do things and not take no in a way that is from that.
I almost can recognize or see different women or girls who were exposed to a certain kind of entitlement that is really healthy. And I think as females growing up in this, you know, 70s based families, we were both like Soph and I, our mothers have met and got along very well. And I don't think we were invited to the lunch. And I don't think we will ever hear all that they discussed.
They have a lot in common. So we always wanted to get them together.
But the awareness that we are, I don't know, it's a couple of things, but we are continuing the both the gains and making up for the sacrifices our mothers made. And once you're, I can speak for myself and Soph can say what she experienced, but if anybody put my dad's sense of what women can do to the test, it was having a daughter. Because he wasn't ever going to say that I couldn't do something because I was his daughter. He might not have had the thought about his wife or gotten as far. But once you have a daughter, I think it's one of the greatest things that can happen to a man because they have to really think about what do they think a woman can do once they have a daughter.
Yeah, but it's true that they couldn't encourage their wives the way that they had to be confronted with daughters. And yeah, they have that. We have a similar experience of that.
Did you both feel very encouraged in your respective cases? Was there a real degree of sort of, oh, you want to pursue, let me not help you, but let me just tell you that I'm in your corner? You know, like, or was there competitiveness? Like, how did it play out?
I don't want to speak for Rainer, but I think we both had this where I feel like my dad was just always talking to me the same as my brother about just always trying to share, talking about writing and filmmaking since we were very little, just as, you know, like, this is just like, you know, trying to give that knowledge and just assuming that, you know, you were going to do that too, that you give that to your kids and just talk to them always as they're going to grew up to be artists. Or, I don't know. It's something about grooming you in a way that it wasn't even a question. It was just like, this is how you do that.
I would say that not just getting a inordinate amount of dialogue and plain old having fun thinking together was a very common full-on activity.
I was just thinking about this as before we got on the call, but your last movie, Sophia, which I haven't seen, I've read about, but and I look forward to seeing, does have an art world component in it. And I was wondering if you and Rainer had spoken about that kind of art world archetype, as it were, the bon vivant ex-gallerist.
Well, I was trying to find, I had this character that Bill Murray plays called Felix, and he's like a man of the world. And I couldn't figure out what his profession was, and then I think it was Tamara, my friend Tamara Jenkins, who's a filmmaker, she said, what about an art dealer or so, and that clicked perfectly because of people I know, and it just seemed like it seems like he's always kind of working a deal and he's from another generation, and so when you see it you can tell me if he seems like believable as that. But for me the art world's exotic because I grew up in the film world. So I love going with Rainer to art events and I love going into the art world because it's, to me, as someone that it's a foreign, exotic place. So to you guys,
that may be part of things too. I mean, I was thinking about the kind of back when we started talking, I was thinking about a few things that created a connection over time. Definitely that we drew each other drawings as kids, but also that we had these two families that had an unspoken language of art and making things. I was just reading in preparing those notes and our conversation, I was reading the journal from when Soph and I met. And then it's like 6 months later, Soph, we are at the premiere of Peggy Sue Got Married.
That's so funny.
And it's just so awesome to read a teenager's writing, because Soph has a teenager right now. But incredibly direct, incredibly critical about who's in the room. It didn't matter if they were a movie star or not. I was just like, bah, 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 bah. And Soph and I thought this, and it's really, really...
This is amazing. These are your journals from back in the day that you have access to still?
Yeah, look, I'll show you one.
Rainer, is that right?
I'll show you.
Whoa.
Rainer always kept a journal, and she tried to get... I tried to start, but I never could keep the habit. So, but I love it. She's got her whole life in journals. I know.
That's
so
amazing.
I wish I had that. It's so cool, Rainer, that you have kept this.
That's like the most... That's so cool.
They have these really cool, like, archival...
Rainer also, you're always big on archiving. She taught me and encouraged me to archive. You don't think your stuff is important. And then I like that you value.
Well, both my parents were big on saving things.
That's so cool.
I'm into that. So cool.
And
hey, Rainer and Sophia. So great to have you guys today. Anyway, I appreciate both of you being part of this. It means a lot.
Thanks, Lucas.
Thanks for having us, Lucas.
Dialogues is produced by David Zwirner. You can find out more about the artists on this series by going to davidzwirner.com/dialogues. And if you liked what you heard, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It really does help other people discover the show. I'm Lucas Zwirner. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you join us again next time.